position status of permanent easement in common law. And that means that unless there is an express waiver of immunity, the commission has been granted to bring suit against a government entity such as a city or school district. Can a lawsuit be brought? Otherwise, a lawsuit cannot be brought, and there are public policy reasons that the Supreme Court has established and set forth in several cases that outline the public policy reasons, and that also helps protect the public fiscal responsibility and also protects the public from misdeeds by its government officers. In these cases, this court should reverse the decision by the trial court in appeal number 125, the writ of reentry appeal, and vacate the writ that was granted by the court below. In appeal 262, which is from the district court, this court should reverse the denial of the city's privy jurisdiction as to plaintiff's fraud claims, breach of contract claim, and takings claim that was alleged in physical occupation. And also in appeal 262, this court should affirm the grant of the city's plea to the jurisdiction asserting immunity as to plaintiff's breach of warranty claim and federal takings claim. Back to the writ of reentry case briefly. In that case, Mr. McDonald filed suit in the JP Court in Denton County under Chapter 93 of the Texas Property Code, alleging he was entitled to a writ of reentry back on the property that he used to lease from the city. And it used to be a lease contract. The facts show that the city terminated that contract. And the lease terminated on February 7, 2011. Mr. McDonald filed his suit in March of 2011. The city asserted a plea to the jurisdiction, asserting that under Chapter 93, there is no express legislative waiver of the city's immunity from suit, and therefore the suit cannot be brought against the city in that case. The law in Texas is that there is a presumption of immunity in favor of government entities such as the city, and there was no allegation under Chapter 93 that that had been waived.
Mr. Voss, can you clarify for what time period are we looking at as far as the plaintiff's assertion that they had to secure your right of possession to the property? Well, are we looking back at 2008 or are we
looking? No, we're looking at 2011.
We're looking at 2011.
Right.
And what happened in 2011 that perhaps changed the circumstances?
Well, under the, this is in the record, under the terms of the lease contract between Mr. McDonald and the city, there was a provision that allowed for either party to terminate the lease based upon providing a notice of termination within a 6 to 9 month time frame prior to the end of the lease term. The end of the second lease term, it's a 10-year term, was February 7th of 2011. On March 19th, the city issued a notice of termination of the lease, which was within that 6 to 9 month window. And as a result, the lease terminated just by operation of that notice. And so that's what changed between previous allegations by this company about these problems and the current situation.
And so sometime between February 7th, 2011 and March 8th of 2011, the city physically took possession of the properties that were
in. That's correct, Your Honor. The city assumed control under the terms of the contract because that was the agreement that was reached, is that either party could terminate it. And so the city operated under that, under those terms. But Mr. McDonald filed his writ of reentry case. The city asserted a plea of jurisdiction to the Justice Court was denied. The city appealed the judgment from the Justice Court to the County Court of Law, and again reasserted a plea of jurisdiction, saying that under Chapter 93, there is no express waiver of immunity. Also, the city asserted that under Chapter 93, the claims therein are akin to alleging intentional tort harm. The allegations are very specific that Mr. McDonald asserted against the city that the city unlawfully took possession of the property, cut his power lines, locked him out of the property. And so allegations of intentional harm against the municipality run right into prohibition in the Texas Tort Claims Act that say that municipal governments cannot be sued for intentional harm.
Support your position that suit under Chapter
30,
suit under Chapter 93 is a suit for an intentional tort?
No, Your Honor, there's not. That's one of the aspects about this particular case that sort of make it important in my request of oral argument, because there are no such cases in Texas. doesn't appear to have been tried before. That's kind of similar to what the Supreme Court noted in the city of Galveston case where the state is suing the city. And it looked at what the Supreme Court voted for. It doesn't look like this issue's ever come up before. And this is another one of those.
Can I ask you another question? And this is one that I want to ask both council. And I know you're going to disagree with this premise, but I ask that you follow it and then answer my question. If this court were to find that entering into this lease, the city was engaging in a proprietary function versus a governmental function, what would be the effect of that on each of these cities?
Well, the court would find that, of course, I do disagree with it because that's what my opponent is asserting. But if the court were to find that these were proprietary functions, then we would have to look at the particular immunity issues that are in. I mean, it could defeat the city's immunity if that was the case. I assert that it's not the case. But these contracts were not arising out of the city's proprietary functions. I've cited the court to the city of Plano, which is the Moten case, and to other cases that dealt with recreational facilities. This lease was a lease of the city's land to the street dog to operate a golf driving.
But you weren't operating a golf driving range. He was. This was just a lease by the city for a profit.
Well, whether it was profitable or not, I think reasonable minds could differ because there has been no development of that in the record. But it was a lease of the city's land. And I assert that just because unlike in the city of Plano case, the city of Dallas case, where the city's actually I assert that that's a distinction without a difference, but they're still providing recreational facilities that's available to the public.
So if you were leasing this land to Mr. McDonald for farming corn, would the outcome be different?
It could be because I don't have the whole list of the 101-025 governmental functions memorized, but this is under subsection 23 that talks about recreational uses. And it's also the allegations against the city are brought as a result of the district court case, in Appeal 262, complaining about the city's wastewater legislation. That is under subsection 9 of the court's on that section. And the provision of sewer, water facilities is a governmental function. And that's what the complaint is in that case. They're complaining about the city's operation of it. And so that, to me, is an allegation that brings into play the city's governmental function. Therefore, we have governmental immunity. That's why we're sort of a thing. And before I lose track, before I get to the district court case in more detail, the last point that we've argued regarding the river reentry is that the claims were moved. The lease was up. It was terminated. And so, with it being terminated, there's no standing. If there's standing, the court doesn't have jurisdiction. We inserted that for both the Jenkins court and the county court of law. In the district court case, the city asserted a limited freedom of jurisdiction. As the court knows, this is the second time that it's heard portions of this case. The freedom of jurisdiction that was asserted by the city and brings us here today was to say that the plaintiff's fraud claim, breach of contract claim, breach of warranty claim, Texas takings claim, occupation, not nuisance. That's the difference between the circuits. I was already ruling on this. And the federal takings claim were without the court's jurisdiction because they violated the city's governmental immunity. The court denied the city's plea as to the fraud, breach of contract, and the Texas takings claim, and we assert that was error. As to the fraud claim, clearly that's an intentional tort. There's a prohibition, as I've already stated, in the Tort Claims Act under Section 101.057 that prohibits persons from suing cities for intentional tort or intentional harm. Fraud is clearly an intentional harm. As for the breach of contract, this is a lease of the city property. We run into what Justice Gable asked before. The city asserts that this was a government function because the city was leasing the land for recreational uses. The alleged harm, the alleged breach of contract was based on the McDonald's complaint about how the city was operating the wastewater legislation that's located on the north. Texas takings claim, the issue there, because we've now on our Sixth Amendment petition, the allegations have developed to be that Mr. McDonald's complaining about some construction activities that occurred on and near the building. The city refurbished the bus station back in 2008-2009, and also there was a hike and bike trail that was constructed, not on the property, but near the property on one side of it. Mr. McDonald complains about that and alleges that that was a physical occupation that constitutes a taking under Texas jurisprudence. We certainly was not.
So you're saying the hike and bike trail that was approved during this time was not contained within the leasehold premises?
Exactly.
It was not. It abutted it, so it was near?
It's near it. It's
near.
It's on the west side of the property.
But wasn't there complaint really that there was damage done to the lease property by the trucks and construction vehicles?
And that was
a different issue.
That is different than the physical taking in one sense, but because of that difference, there is no takings because these are mere temporary inconveniences that occurred during the construction, and then they were remedied afterwards. There is no, under the law in Texas, temporary diminution in value, construction activities like that don't constitute the kind of taking that warrants fulfills the obligations under the Texas law. What is so those, the court denied those, this court to reverse that denial. And then the last part of Appeal 262 concerns the part of the city's jurisdiction that was granted to the city, and that is regarding the breach of warranty claims that are served by the bond and also the federal claims. The breach of warranty claim has already been ruled on by this court. Back in the original appeal, the position, it dismissed the breach of warranty claims, and we assert that under the law of case logic, that prohibits that claim from going forward anymore. One of the things that is also asserted by the law is that the breach of warranty claim is somehow, the city somehow stopped, because there was another eviction case back in 2008-2009, and part of the defense in that case was an allegation by Mr. McDonald of a breach of warranty. But in that eviction case, the only issue is the right of possession. And so that doesn't bind us here. Besides, this court is a superior court to the county court of law, and to the Texas court. And also, under section 31.004 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, lower court judgments cannot act as an estoppel or a bar to a superior court operating in this particular case, the district court and also this court. So under those, for those reasons, the breach of warranty claim was properly granted. Also, the federal takings claim is not right. Before a litigant can ever allege under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution that property has been taken unlawfully, there first has to be a compliance with the state's procedures to recover damages for that alleged taking, and then there can be an allegation under the Fifth Amendment for taking in federal law. And here, that claim is simply not right because we're not there yet. The allegations in this case are of inverse condemnation. One aspect of it is the nuisance part. We're not here today on that. This court's hard to rule on that. The other part is physical occupation part is what we're about to mention.
What about the plaintiff's argument that the breach of warranty has not been prolonged
because it's based on facts? Well, I assert that then if that is going to be an allegation that this court considers, then we still look to the underlying claim. And what is the underlying claim? Is there an express waiver somewhere in Texas law that says the city can be sued for breach of warranty? And I think the same rationale applies as this court used during the original appeal, and it should have been dismissed as properly because it violates the city's domain. My time is up.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Boss.
Mr.
Bettles?
Thank you, Your Honor.
May I please support? My name is Ray Bell. I'm a lawyer with the firm Anderson Burns & Bell. My partner, Richard Anderson, has always also been involved in the case of the court. We represent John McDonald, the appellant here, and Kelly, Helen, and Kelly in this case.
Can you raise your microphone?
Yeah. He's an appellate and appellee in this case. Because of the time limits, I'm not going to be able to address every issue in our briefing. And the extent that I don't get to those, I ask for to rely on the briefing on those issues. Again, this case, I think it's important to focus on the facts of the case. The facts involve a McDonald's business dealing with the city of Colony. And Mr. McDonald paid $150,000 to purchase an existing golf center business that was primarily a driving range. And his predecessors entered into the original agreement with the city. And what that agreement said is that the city is going to lease raw land. And the operator of the course, the owner of the business, is going to develop that land. There's evidence in the record that shows that the development of the land consisted of the construction of two buildings, concrete tee boxes, a parking lot, and other facilities or other improvements like lights consistent with the golf driving range. It's also important that the contract makes it clear that those improvements are owned by Mr. McDonald. He has an ownership interest in those, and at the termination, if the contract is terminated, the city has to pay him for those. So there's a clear separation. When we start talking about some of these cases that council has brought up, saying, well, this is recreation, this is a golf course, those cases are distinguishing for that purpose, because here, McDonald has asserted, and I believe that he has a clear ownership interest in the improvements and therefore the property.
In your sixth petition, have you sued for payment for your improvement?
Well, as the court noted, we abated and consolidated this case. The abatement was done because the city of Mr. McDonald came to an agreement as to the improvement, the price of the improvements. There was a Rule 11 agreement executed between the lawyers, and the city later wanted to add additional terms to the McDonald agreement. We went before Judge Bailey, as ordered by the court, and Judge Bailey's ruling was that he could not enforce the agreement, that basically under the way the law is, the city gets the opportunity to raise defenses to the contract. Last week, Mr. McDonald filed another lawsuit to enforce that contract. So that is something that's pending between the parties as we speak. Again, this is a case that I know two of the three judges have probably don't remember me, but I was in front of you before arguing this case. And back in June of 2009, Justice Walker issued an opinion, and it dealt with some of the same issues. I think the first issue that's important is that this court doesn't have jurisdiction over the breach of contract and takings claims. Now, Judge Shipman entered an order. The city, when the case was first filed, the city, back in 2007, filed a plea to jurisdiction based on nuisance, breach of contract, taking, breach of warranty, and negligence. The court granted the city's plea with regard to nuisance, breach of warranty, and negligence, and it denied the plea as to breach of contract and takings. The city did not appeal that denial on the breach of contract. It didn't appeal it. And we're here on an interlocutory appeal. And the Texas Supreme Court has made it clear in the case Starry versus the Board that the Court of Appeals are strictly construed statutes allowing interlocutory appeals. Again, it does go into subject matter jurisdiction. And I remember from law school, Arthur Miller saying subject matter jurisdiction cannot be waived. Etch that in your records, and it was etched in mine. And I'm not saying that the city can't raise that. I'm just saying I can't raise it now. Because
you argue that this is a breach of warranty claim. Well, the facts have developed more and you're in a different position than you were.
That's
so
right.
Now you can bring that back up again. Why isn't the same true with these two claims that you're trying to say that they can't resurrect?
Because the breach of contract claim, nothing has changed with the contract. The contract that you're arguing over is the same contract that it was back in 2007. There's nothing, what the court ruled back then is that this, the only argument that McDonald made to the court that he had jurisdiction was that this was not a governmental function, this was a proprietary function. And because of that, the court had jurisdiction. So nothing has changed. The contract is the same contract that it was back then. And as you stated, with the breach of warranty, we have new facts. And before the board of directors are a bunch of photographs that show the city and its contractors' occupation and use of the golf center. So I think they're distinguishable because of that. So again, we believe that at least as far as the breach of warranty, or breach of contract and takings claims, that there's a jurisdictional issue, and that interlocutory appeal is not available because of the procedural history of the case.
That said, it changed this takings claim?
The takings claim? Well, in my argument with the takings claim is that in this court's opinion, the court stated with regard to the takings that we also hold that McDonald's invoked the trial court subject matter jurisdiction regarding the nuisance claims as alleged by facts presenting jurisdiction evidence to establish a waiver of the city's governmental immunity for nuisance arising to the level of unconstitutional taking. Now, I think the facts have changed a little bit with the takings in that I think the breach of warranty where the city took over and occupied the portions of the golf center property, I think that is a taking also. And I think that adds to the McDonald's argument. But I think that it is kind of segregated with the facts because this court has already looked at the takings related to nuisance. And I think that you have to distinguish those. And then you can't get a second bite of the apple to see with regard to those nuisance takings.
I also have a question about the city of Columbus.
clear that when the city enters into a contract and proprietary capacity, the city has no immunity and has the same duty and liability as a private person who has to enter into a contract. And it's important to look at the facts of the case. And what we're dealing with is a lease of undeveloped land that a developer is going to develop and improve with property improvements that the developer owns for profit. And the city had no say in how things were operated, had no management responsibilities. All that they did is money. They were doing a function. Still, we think that, again, that, you know, the distinction that the city wants to make is that the property is governmental, not to be it's called for its recreation. If the property is developed as a Chuck E. Cheese, or as a dance club, or as a shooting range, a ski range, those are also recreation, or those governmental companies. Is that business that the government should be? What I would submit is that the government role should be limited to government. Here, acting as a commercial landlord for profit, the city's trying to act more like Donald Trump, a commercial real estate developer for profit. And when they, and the Supreme Court's made clear that when they jump out onto that limb, that they are being treated like landlords. Citizens. And in this context, we're talking about private function, but in my opinion, I don't city's theory, they can say, well, we're going to act Bernie Madoff and take some money and, you know, not really invest it, but use it for something else. It's too bad. There's no limit. We've got to deal with it. And to me, that argument's offensive. And I think the fact that governmental unity in the state has gotten to that point is something that I would hope the legislature and the court would get to fix it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to Mr. Reynolds' argument, I think the city should not be using fraud. That argument is completely awesome. The Supreme Court has made it clear in the city of Galveston case that it's the Texas legislature that decides what it is and government function that allows municipal governments, school districts, special districts to be sued or not. The argument, though, that the development of the land by the tenant of it is therefore triggers the proprietary view of things is an argument really that sort of sounds like the Blythe case that we discussed in the briefs. And in the Blythe case, it's undisputed there that it was the city that was the developer. Here, it's undisputed that the city didn't develop this. It was the tenant who did this. It was really the lease of the city's land. The argument here about the lack of jurisdiction over breach of contract or takings claims based upon the previous deal, I think, were without merit. I've discussed the land in the city's reply brief. The one case that apparently exists in Texas that deals with successive pleas for jurisdiction and an attempt to appeal, and that's that city of Houston versus Jones case. I checked in the last time, it seems that a petition had been filed and still pending the Texas Supreme Court, so we're going to review that case. But this case, in that Houston case, there was an allegation that the jurisdiction was claiming to, and then there was some procedural time and events that occurred when Mr. Gentleman passed away. The case got transferred from the district court to the probate court. The city reasserted the jurisdiction of action more than one time, and it's the same put. Same previous, as far as I can tell from reading the opinion. Here, we have not the original petition, not the first amendment, but we have a sixth amendment petition that's greatly expanded what has been alleged the city to have done wrong.
What facts are
in the petition? Well, there are allegations that the city violated operation and maintenance of the lift station, but also the reconstruction of the lift station. And the city agrees to contract, by the way, it did that construction, by the way, it did the construction of the trail. There are allegations that the city agrees to lease because of the harming Mr. Will to do business there. Those are different. It's just like the technics things are different. As I said, I'm not here on any of the allegations arising as a result of a nuisance that's been alleged. The takings claims are different here because we have allegations of a physical occupation. And I'll address that in a brief to show that those claims are invalid because they arise out of construction. It was temporary for convenience and thrown into a taking of public use. Also, the law has changed. Since we were here last, the courts have come out with a clearer understanding of what kinds of contracts are subject to the waiver in Chapter 371 of the Government Code. Those contracts that are subject to waiver, in other words, a kind of contract that is something that the city can be sued over, are contracts for goods and services. And cases have come out since 2008, 2009, that clarify that the kinds of contracts we're dealing with here, which is an interest in land, is not the kind of goods and services contract that falls within the limited waiver in Chapter 271 of the local government. So that's the difference. And based on the arguments that
certainly here, in our opinion, court has jurisdiction to hear these appeals. The court will reverse the denial of a city's jurisdiction in the intervention case, and also should reverse the district court's denial of a city's regarding the fraud, breach of contract, and fiscal occupation of takings claim under Texas law, and affirm the dismissal of the breach of warranty and the federal takings claim.
All right.